Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. Thank you very much for listening to the Press Row podcast. It's been an amazing 2016. We had our 200th episode, last episode where we chose our 2016 sports game of the year. This is episode 201. I wanted to take just a moment to let you know that, yes, Out of the Park Baseball 17 was the Metacritic PC Game of the Year winner. Not sports game of the year, the PC game of the year winner. It's an incredible achievement, and we are all very excited at Out of the Park Developments for that. And also, Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is available right now, today. Both of these games can be yours during our holiday sale. You can get Out of the Park Baseball 17 for just $9.99. And you can get Franchise Hockey Manager 3 for just $29.99. These are all deep discounts on both of these great games. And that is now through January 4th. So you got through January 4th to pick up these two great games if you haven't already. And if you have, thank you very much on behalf of everybody at Out of the Park Developments for supporting these great games and this great little indie game-making company. It's a crazy world out there, and being able to have the kind of success that we had this year has been an amazing achievement. So thank you very much. And once again, go pick up Out of the Park Baseball 17 for just $9.99 during our holiday sale, or Franchise Hockey Manager 3 for just $29.99. Check them out. If you want to see what these games are about, if you haven't before, every Wednesday night, TJ Lowerman and Adam Burnett go live on Twitch with both of these games, 9 p.m. Eastern for the baseball, 10 p.m. Eastern for the hockey. And of course, our YouTube page for Out of the Park Developments has all of these archived. So if you want to know how to play or what the game is like, go check that as well. Thank you again. Happy New Year and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wheateye, Pasta Padre, and we're right at the time of the year for the college football playoff. And you know what, Rich Grisham, this is a special year because we both have teams involved in the tournament.
Yeah, unprecedented for you and I. Really unprecedented. I don't purport to be a college football historian. I don't know how many times Alabama and Washington have played. I'm sure it's less than 10. It may be less than 5. I don't know. That's one thing in and of itself that would be fun, to have it be in a college football semifinal playoff on New Year's Eve. Just takes that and ramps it up to 1,000. Obviously, Alabama is the incumbent champion, the heavy favorite. Washington is the upstart, the number 4, the last team in. Plenty of good discussion and controversy surrounding that. But I look at it as an Alabama fan, as a game I expect them to win. But by no means am I confident or cocky. I'm confident, but I'm not cocky. And I know that Washington can win this game. I mean, you don't get to the college football semifinals if you can't win one of these games. So I'm excited. It should be a fantastic game.
Yeah, and it's been like 25 years as a Huskies fan and someone who went to University of Washington. And we've had some rough years in between there, including an 0-12 season. And I'm not sure the accuracy of this, but what I'm looking at now, I believe Alabama and Washington have played 4 times in history, the last time in 1986.
I was going to say, it's been a long time. It seems like you and I have been working together and such for a number of years now. It seems like we would have remembered the last time that had happened if it were in the recent past.
Yeah, and chances of any single team making the Final Four is slim, unless your name is Alabama, of course, or Ohio State.
Of course. They earned that. They earned that right. Yeah. But you're right. Absolutely correct.
Yeah, and so it's just funny how it worked out that it ended up being our two teams against each other, and it's going to be interesting. And I am very excited for it. And I think Washington has the tools. They have the makeup that could beat Alabama. Certainly, I'm not expecting that. But I think it's going to be interesting at the very least. And we'll talk a little bit in a few minutes about what NCAA Football 14 thinks, because we pulled that out of the cotton balls here and went back to it to see what NCAA Football 14 projects with updated rosters and everything. But yeah, I mean, so Washington, Alabama, Washington's a 14-point underdog. Any team would have been at least a double-digit underdog against Alabama, so that's not really saying that Washington's overmatched compared to anybody else. Alabama is just considered that far above the field.
And, well, yeah, a couple things here. So when Alabama is not playing for a national championship in a bowl game, they tend to have a big letdown. It was a couple years before, a couple years ago, or a couple of different times, they've been beaten once in the Sugar Bowl by, I believe it was Utah, that were, they were not supposed to win that game, but Alabama was not playing for national championship and did not even really show up.
Disinterested.
Yeah, and there was another one of those games in the last couple of years as well. So, and in addition to that, Alabama lost the very first college football semifinal to a upstart Ohio State with a very young third or fourth string quarterback. Mm-hmm. So it is, for all of the talk about Alabama being a huge favorite, which they are, it is far from unprecedented for them to lose a college semifinal or B, a big bowl game to a team from the western part of the country that is a decided underdog. Mm-hmm. You know, people forget about those kind of things, but, you know, they happen and they have happened. And I'm not talking the last 20 years. I'm talking in Nick Saban's reign as college football coach, and in probably both of those losses happened in the last 5 years. So, you know, there's anything can happen. A couple of turnovers, special teams play or two. Yeah. It's football, right? And we all know that. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup. And on the other hand, I have been very impressed by this Alabama team. Obviously, they've won multiple national championships in the last few years. They are incredibly strong where it's most important, which is in the offensive and the defensive lines. I think, you know, if I were to build a college football program and or a professional franchise, I would build it around two things. Number one is the offensive line, and number two are the cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. And I think Alabama is very strong in the offensive line and the defensive line, yeah, less so, but still so on at the corner position. Where Alabama really wins their games is not early, but late. And I don't mean late comebacks. I mean, they're so strong, they're so physically demanding, yeah, that they really wear teams down. You've seen it in most of their games where they rarely get out to the massive leads early, but by the middle of the third quarter and into the fourth quarter is where they really just flip those games. And that's my expectation, is that Washington will hang and they will play well, but Alabama will win later on because of their incredible power and strength.
Do you think they have the capability to come back from a deficit?
I don't know, because they really haven't had to do that. Do they have the capability? Of course. If you have the capability to be undefeated, you have the capability to come back from a deficit. Their quarterback is a freshman, but he is a freshman plus, meaning he's played an entire regular season, and now this is a post-game season. So he's got a full regular season under his belt, but he does not have postseason experience. Now, granted, I don't have the slightest idea what Washington's experience is at the quarterback position or any other skill position. So they have the capability. They have incredibly talented players, and they have a fantastic coaching staff. But they haven't had to do it, or if they have, it's been relatively early on in games. Mm-hmm. So it'll be very interesting. You know, when any team is forced to get out of their game, then that's when bad things tend to happen. And if Alabama is forced to get out of its game, meaning trying to play catch up in the later part of the game, that could bode poorly for them, because they're not really built around that. They're built around both a strong running game powered by that offensive line and a good passing game that ensures that the running game will be able to flex its muscles late in the game.
Yeah, I see a couple avenues to victory for the Huskies, and that involves, obviously, their offense has to put up points, and they average 45 points a game. But the one time they really did struggle offensively was against USC, who has kind of a comparable defense to Alabama. I'm not saying they're quite Alabama, but they're physical, and they have some exceptional young talent, especially defensive backs. at USC. But the Huskies, they can put up points. Jake Browning's a fantastic sophomore quarterback.
They will put up points. I mean, I expect them to score. I expect them to score against Alabama. That's what they do. They're good at it. They've got enough talent and experience to score some points in this game no matter what.
Yeah, so not only just on offense with Browning and John Ross outside as a burner receiver and a good run game with Miles Gaskin, who's kind of a bruising back, and LeVon Coleman, who's a bit more of a he's going to break a big run more often than not. But special teams also could be big with John Ross again, great kick returner. He has the capability to take it to the end zone on a kick return. And then there's Dante Pettis, who's one of the best punt returners in the nation. So if the Huskies can get points in special teams, if they can be effective on offense, the one concern I have now, the Huskies have a great defensive backfield, maybe the best in the nation. Pass rush is a bit of a concern. They were good for about half the season. The second half, not as good. There's an injury to one of their top pass rushers. So that's where I would look at if they can't get a pass rush, that might be trouble. And also on the defensive line, if they can't stop the run game, obviously, if the offensive line of Alabama controls the game, then there's going to be huge trouble for the Huskies. They want the ball. They want more possessions. So time of possession is going to be critical. And, yeah, I mean, turnovers obviously are going to be a big deal. Like you mentioned, I think Alabama, when they've lost, it's in a lot of those cases, it's been self-inflicted turnovers that have really done them in. It's uncharacteristic for them, but that's kind of the only way you can beat them is you have to play almost perfect and they have to make a mistake or two. So that's what I'm looking for.
And it happens. Like I said, it's not unprecedented. It doesn't happen often. They've lost, what, once in the last, I don't know, couple of years easily, right? And and three or four times in the last 5 years, right? So they don't lose often, but they do. It's college football. Anything can happen. And again, they lost in the, 2 years ago in the college football semifinal to Ohio State. And that is a game where Alabama, I believe, and most people did believe at the time, and I think probably still do, Alabama was the better team. But in 60 minutes on the gridiron, a lot of things can happen, and turnovers will be big. And, you know, as an Alabama guy, and, you know, you mentioned it's your school. I can't claim Alabama as my alma mater, but both of my parents are graduates of the University of Alabama, and I was born in Alabama. So well before I knew anything else, I was indoctrinated into Alabama. So that is my reason for being an Alabama football fan. I certainly did not, like, 7 years ago, be like, wow, Alabama just won the national championship. They're now my college football team. So anyway, having said that, they haven't seen a lot like Washington. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can watch a lot of film and you can do a lot of preparation, and Nick Saban is fantastic at preparation, and his record and his record having extended time to prepare is very good. It's not perfect, but it's very good. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much preparation versus being on the field, and they haven't seen or played a team like Washington, particularly their defense playing against that offense. And that is something that will really bear watching. You should get a feel. And in Alabama, by the way, Clemson scored a lot of points last year against Alabama in the championship game as well. Mm-hmm. So as vaunted as their defense is, and for good reason, it's laid a beating on a lot of different teams. It can be scored upon, and I expect Washington to score points because they play differently than anyone else Alabama has played in the last couple of years.
And who's the pressure on in this game? Because I would think maybe the looser team would be the Huskies.
Alabama, really, from my perspective, and I don't live there. I live in New Jersey, so I can't claim to have a real finger on the pulse of the beat. But Nick Saban is under as much pressure as he feels like being under. I mean, he could, with the national championships that he's won and the prestige that he has brought this program back to, in fact, not back to, but surpassing the prestige it's ever had. And you're talking about one of the greatest college football programs ever, and he has it at its height. That is amazing. He could lose this game, and he could never win another game, coach for 15 years, never win another big game, and he'd be fine with what he's done. Uh-huh. However, he puts himself under tremendous pressure, but that's all self-imposed. So I don't think Alabama's under any pressure other than the standard kind of pressure that comes being a favorite in a big game, right? And these are kids, right? These are not professionals that have been playing this 5 or 10 or 15 years. We talk about history in college football, and it's important because a lot of the a lot of the surroundings are the same in coaches and programs and universities. But the kids on the field, they are in and out. And there's a lot of kids who are playing who have never been in this position, a lot who have maybe been there once, maybe twice. So, you know, there's that kind of pressure. But honestly, to me, it's not pressure because anyone's in a particularly difficult position. It's only pressure because, man, this is New Year's Eve. It's a college football semifinal. Everybody's watching. It's just big time. But I honestly don't think anybody comes out of this a loser, right? If Alabama loses, it's not some sort of trauma for the University of Alabama.
Really, though? No. Isn't Alabama kind of win or bust? I mean, it's a disappointment.
It's a disappointment if you don't win the national championship at Alabama. But disappointment and worse, like, you know, catastrophe, or people are getting fired, or people are jumping out of windows. No, they're the defending national champions. You know, they've won multiple national championships in the last few years. They have bought themselves a lot of capital, and so no, for my seat, there's no pressure on either of these teams, other than, like I said, this is awesome, it's exciting, and they want to excel at the highest level.
So NCAA football 14 updated rosters,
great game.
I mean, the game still holds up really well. Few quirks here and there when you're watching CPU play CPU, but overall it's really entertaining actually to watch, and the games play out pretty realistically. And you see some teams, they'll go up tempo. You'll see others, a more pro style offense. So it's kind of fascinating to watch these play out. And in the past of running sims, they've been pretty accurate. Just this year, I ran 3 for the conference championship games. NCAA went 3-0. Predicted the Huskies blowout. It predicted the close win for Penn State, and it predicted Clemson to blow out Virginia Tech, though Clemson.
You didn't run Alabama destroying Florida, huh?
No, it wasn't relevant at the time. Alabama was in the college football playoff. They were going to be number one regardless. So I just concentrated on the three games that were going to matter for that weekend. Because come on, Rich, I'm pretty sure Alabama would have won the sim.
I was confident going into that game they would win handily.
Yeah, I think pretty much everyone was. So I broke out NCAA 14 for the two college football playoff games, and since we just talked about Alabama-Washington, let's start with that one. This was an interesting sim because it started, it looked like Alabama was going to dominate. They came out, forced a 3-and-out, went down the field, got a touchdown. Next series for the Huskies ended in an interception on third down, which is kind of just chucked deep, pretty much acted as a punt. Alabama went down, got stopped in the red zone, though, for a field goal. So they had a 10-0 lead early in the game. Washington hadn't done anything. The Huskies came back, though, on the following possession, drove down the field, 29-yard touchdown pass. So at 10-7, it felt like, okay, we're back. We actually have a game. I was a little worried there that Alabama was just going to blow the doors off and run away with it. Didn't happen. Jalen Hurts, quarterback, Alabama. The team was running a lot of zone read. Is that something Alabama does, Rich?
Well, he does run the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he is a non-traditional Alabama quarterback. He is a very different than the kids who have piloted Alabama to championships or not in the last few years, a couple of them who have made it to the NFL, none of whom have made an impact. But he is a he is definitely a guy who will run the ball more than any Alabama quarterback I can remember in a long time. And so that doesn't – that, again, is impressive how NCAA Football 14 seems to have gotten that right because of his skill set.
Yeah, and so he actually in the game, he had two rushing touchdowns. He didn't have any passing touchdowns. So Hurts, yeah, the zone read was pretty effective. And the offensive line was giving him a lot of time to throw the ball early on. But in the ensuing drive, Hurts threw an ill-advised pass to the flat where the Huskies corner, Sidney Jones, picked it off. And then the run game for the Huskies started to work. Myles Gaskin had a few big runs. They moved in the red zone, installed there, tied it up at 10. Became a bit of a defensive battle after that. Ended up going into halftime 10-10, and actually into the fourth 10-10. Jalen Hurts was picked off by Buda Baker, fantastic safety for the Huskies. And that's right at that point, very next play, Jake Browning found John Ross down the middle for 64 yards. That ended up setting up a go-ahead touchdown for Gaskin. Alabama were in the middle of the fourth, so a big drive. They had to answer, and they did. Just went all the way down the field methodically, converted on a fourth and short. Hurts ran the ball in for the touchdown, tied it up at 17. Couple punts after that, and we headed to overtime. Rich, how would you feel going into overtime?
Well, considering how that game went, I suppose fortunate. It's all about what's happening at the moment, right? You ask people all the time, oh, ask me if I would take being in the World Series game 6 at the start of the year. I'd say yes every time. So you ask me right now, if you tell me overtime, I'm like, whoa, that's a little concerning. But if I'm watching that game in real time, as you describe it, I'm thinking overtime is a blessing.
Yeah, I know I'd be having fun because, again, I feel like almost nothing to lose going into this game. So I think that'd be exciting. Alabama won the toss, played defense. Browning found John Ross. He broke two tackles to get into the end zone on a pass to take the 24-17 lead.
And the kids are tired, man. They've been playing a long game.
Yeah, so Alabama's ball got to answer with a touchdown. They got to third and goal from the 6, but were sacked. Pushed them back to the 12, fourth and goal. Pass over the middle, dropped. He was going to be short even if he caught it. And the Huskies pulled off the upset in NCAA Football 14, Rich. I don't know if NCAA knows something that most people don't, or if it's just a fluke. But I liked it. I liked it because it didn't look like it was going to go their way at the start. And they hung in there and actually, you know, ran off 17 straight points and then put up a touchdown in overtime. I'll tell you what, that was interesting.
It could happen. There's no doubt it could happen. And it'll be fascinating to see the real game. You know, I love when people say, oh, you play this game 10 times, they win 8 out of 10. Well, they don't play it 10, they play it 1. And whatever happens in that one game is what happens. So
exactly. I mean, I could have run that 10 times, and it could have been Alabama 8 or 9. But they only play the game once, so that's all you need. The other sim, Ohio State and Clemson. I don't know. Do you have an opinion on who you think will win this game?
I think Ohio State will win the game. I can't tell you I watched any Clemson football this year because I didn't. Pretty much watched every Alabama game and then a little bits of everything else. So I expect Ohio State to win. They have a tremendous amount of talent. Clemson does as well. Clemson won last year's college football semifinals, so they've got that going for them. I'm really hoping that I enjoy the game because if Alabama has won, then I will enjoy the game. If Alabama has lost, I will not enjoy the game. All I want to do is enjoy the game. So, yeah, if I'm a betting guy, and I'm not, at least not on these games, I'm not betting on these games, I'm going Ohio State. What is the spread on the game, by the way? Do you know?
It is Ohio State by 3.
Okay, so, and the game is being played, because I know the Alabama game is being played in Atlanta. This game is being played where?
It's in, not Phoenix, but it's Glendale. The Fiesta Bowl, I believe. So
this is really not even remotely close to either team's home base. Like, or the Alabama game is in Atlanta, which is not their home base, but certainly plenty closer to Alabama's home base
here. Sure.
Yeah. Then, and definitely far for Washington, which is not a big deal, but it's a deal.
Yeah, I don't know if the travel is a big deal because they've had a month off and they went there like a week early. So
yeah,
it's not quite the same as in the NFL when that occurs and teams have to travel after 5 days and adapt. They don't have time to adapt to the time change and everything. So I'm not worried about that. But definitely, I mean, I think there's an advantage there for Alabama. It's their region. In the Ohio State Clemson, I mean, these are two teams to me that they played a lot of close games this season that they could have lost.
For sure,
you can look at that two ways, that maybe they're flawed and they got lucky, or they're battle tested.
Exactly. I prefer to look at it as battle tested. Mm-hmm. It's hard to win games, and if you win that many games, you're better than the other teams most of the time. So I definitely don't look at, I mean, every team is flawed, no doubt about it. So if you go in knowing that, I mean, to me, if you've won, that just proves that you're better at things when it really matters.
And so, you know, Clemson probably has the better offense, Ohio State the better defense. It's an interesting matchup.
It is.
In the simulation, though, it wasn't that interesting. I'll tell you, both teams opened up with both teams opened up with field goals. But what happened later was the big development of the game, which was Deshaun Watson, who will scramble at times, scrambled for a first down in the red zone, but he took a hard hit, fumbled. The offense recovered, but Watson didn't. He was diagnosed with a concussion.
Wow.
And had to leave the game.
Wow.
At 3-3 at that point. So you would think that's big
trouble.
Changes
everything. Absolutely.
Big trouble, yeah. But that actually wasn't the case. Stepping into his place, Nick Schuessler, hopefully I pronounced that right. I don't know.
If you say so.
Two plays later, he throws a touchdown pass to make it 10-3. And guess what? Over the next two series, he threw touchdown passes. So it was three possessions, three touchdown passes for the backup quarterback.
No film on him. They had no film, no scouting on him.
Yeah. Final score, 33-13 Clemson.
Wow. Shocker.
So,
but
I don't know.
That also, well, I was going to say it doesn't because Washington won. So that sets up a Washington Clemson final. Yeah. I was about to say it sets up a rematch of last year's Alabama Clemson game.
Yeah. No, not according to this, Rich.
Not according to this, it doesn't. Nope.
Washington Clemson would be a fun game, too. Offense.
Absolutely. Offense, that would be spectacular. A lot of offense. I mean, man. Yeah.
That's what I'd want to see. That's what I would be rooting for. But we'll have to watch and see what happens on Saturday, Rich. It's going to be fun either way. That we got personal involvement in all this. And for me, it's been a long time coming. And for you, you know, you get to celebrate your guys for another year.
That's right. Well, it's an inspirational group of players to watch. I mentioned this earlier, but there's something to be said for excellence. And I've been an Alabama fan longer than anything else in my life because when I was little, you know, my parents, Alabama graduates, right? So before I had any professional affiliations, it was all about Alabama. And my professional teams, generally speaking, Brian, as you know, they're all terrible. So... So you asked me the question, I think, a couple of episodes ago, right? Does it lose some of its luster or lose some of its impact? The answer is absolutely not. In fact, if anything, it's more inspirational to watch excellence. Mm-hmm. You know, people like to dislike the teams that are great over the long period of time, and I totally get it. You know, you talk about like the Patriots or the Yankees. I completely get it. So I understand that there is no love lost for Alabama among many circles of fans. But as a fan, it is just so delightful to watch a team do what this team has done. And this team is absolutely extremely talented with the best athletes in the world on this team. And that's a testament to the recruiting of Nick Saban and his team. But it's just fun to watch a team be really good. And it's the team that you root for. And they're different kids every year. That's the other thing. Unlike professional, like Tom Brady has been at the helm of the Patriots forever. Every year it's different. And every two or three years it's completely different. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like different quarterbacks, different running backs, different receivers.
It's different five-star quarterbacks, running backs,
yes,
receivers.
Absolutely.
Defensive
linemen. But none
for
of those,
you.
None of those quarterbacks go on to the NFL and are any good. Yeah. None of the Alabama quarterbacks are ever any good. A few of their skill players are good. Very few, though, are great. You know, Cooper, Amari Cooper is like, you know, the one Alabama collegiate standout who has become an NFL standout. Well, but you Landon can't Collins name anyone else. Now.
Landon Collins, right?
Okay, right. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm talking real true breakthrough.
Like, yeah, you're right.
They that doesn't happen. And so, that yes, these are talented athletes, but they're also incredibly well coached. And it's more evident every year as the team continues to succeed, whereas the individuals, some of them are great contributors. But again, you know, the vast majority of Alabama pros are functional pros, but none of them are, or very few of them are the standouts. So that's another reason. That's just so fun to watch it as it happens.
All right, Rich. So let's move on to a little bit of what we've been playing since the last show. Our Sports Game of the Year show, we just talked about the games of the year. We didn't talk so much about what we're playing right now. So is it the same Pro Evolution for you, or have you switched a bit?
Yes and yes. So I'll talk about what I switched to for a bit. I think I mentioned this the last time we talked a little bit. I did get back into, after completing my MLB True 162 with full playoffs and World Series, I did move back to NBA 2K. Started a couple different franchises, started one with the Nets and played a few games, and I played it on whatever the default level is. I think it's pro, and I was winning games far too easily with a terrible team. My gosh, the Nets are terrible. And not only are they terrible, but you can't do anything with them because they have no picks. So it's just, they're just like literally the worst team that you could pick a franchise in because you just can't do anything. I mean, they only have one player who can be traded for anything, and that's Brooks Lopez. So, and then when I switched it to the next level after winning the first five or six games, and this is all on the treadmill, by the way, winning the first five or six games by double digits, which should not happen. Then I lost every game by double digits when I moved it up a level because it's much more realistic, which is what the real Nets do. You know, they just don't have players who can actually play the game very well. So what I did was in order to keep playing, I decided, you know, I'm going to change franchises. So I started, as I did with the Nets, I started with the Raptors with the franchise start as today mode. I forget what that's called, Brian. You probably know.
Start today?
But it's start today, right? It starts today. And I started it a couple weeks ago with the Toronto Raptors, who are a much better team
that's
and
a
have
fun
a couple.
Team.
Of, yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what I did. I'm like, you know what? I want to have fun. I want to have fun with this game. This game is really good. Why am I forcing myself to play with this awful team? Let me pick a team that's good. But I didn't want to quite go Cavaliers or Warriors because that's almost like cheating.
Yeah.
Right. So I figure if I go with the Raptors, they're fun, and then I'll get to play, hopefully, in the playoffs, like a Cleveland or somebody else. You know, I have some fun with that. So I've done that. I played a few games, and it's on the All-Pro setting, so it's a level up. But I'm not a great NBA 2K player. I'm a decent NBA 2K player, and I've won a couple games and lost a couple of games. But what it comes down to, Brian, is no matter what, I just keep wanting to go back and play more Pro Evo. I am just completely addicted to the game. And I can get in three games of Pro Evo on the treadmill versus one of NBA 2K. And it's so satisfying, and you're able to make such progress. So I'm now in my second year of Pro Evo as Everton. I completely rebuilt this Everton club, and I finished second in the Premier League in my first year. Not first. I finished second, and I bought several players because I sold several players, and I crashed out of the FA Cup early on and was not in any European competition. So I really only played Premier League games. So every game, every match, especially later on in the season, all of my players were fully rested, and so I really played well. I just couldn't win a couple of the matches against Chelsea, who were the winners when it counted. And Pro Evo being so good, it really didn't let me rattle off 10 victories in a row. You know, there was always those couple of matches where even if it was a club that I felt like I should win, they were just going to win, or I'd get a draw where I should have had a victory or things like that. But there were also plenty of matches where I scored a late goal to win as well. And so I finished second. But then I continued to remake my roster, and now I'm in my second year. And not only am I playing the Premier League matches, but I've also got the Champions League because I finished in second. So I'm in Champions League play. And I'm also, the FA Cup has started again, and I didn't lose in the first round in that. So now, all of a sudden, I'm in mid to late October. So I'm well into the second full month of the season. And I'm got three competitions, and I've also accepted the position as the head coach of the United States. So during the international breaks, I'm also coaching the United States team and playing those games. So there's a lot of competitions going on, and I'm just absolutely loving it. The reason I wanted to mention it is because one other thing that I've done, and this is, I don't even know, like, because I'm sure there are guides to this stuff, but I don't go out in the world and look for this. I just try to figure it out on my own. So based upon the types of how you set up your team, whether it's, you know, a 2-3-4-2 or whatever, you know, the different kind of, right? There are different position names. And so in the world that I'm playing, I've got different positions. Like, I've got one striker, and then I've got a LMF, a CMF, and a RMF. And then I've got a couple of DMFs, and then a couple of CBs, an RB, and an LB. But there are players out there who don't have
formation.
That's right. I can't believe I couldn't come up with that word.
Took me a minute too. So.
But there are players out there whose position titles don't necessarily tie to those formation positions, right? Mm-hmm. So I've got a number of guys on my team that I've either have on the team or I have bought. Like, I bought Raheem Sterling, for example, who is a top club player in Europe, and I bought him last year and have been playing him. But he's a RWF, so it's a different than a RMF. And so basically what I've realized, to make a long story short, I got a bunch of guys on my team who do not exactly have the same position as the positions tied to the formations that I use.
Okay.
So now what I'm doing is, and Gerard Deulofeu is another one. Now, he's a real Everton player. He's actually my top-rated OPR and at 84, but he doesn't have an exact position that matches what he's called. He's an RWF, and I don't have an RWF. I got an RMF. So long story short, what I've decided to do, Brian, is to sell a couple of the players who don't have positions explicitly to the formation that I play, and go buy a couple of players that do. Because what I've realized, I've let the computer pick the lineup for me a couple of times. I typically haven't done that. And what's happened is I've had a couple of players who are like much lower rated than a couple of my other players, but because it's their natural position, they've actually played better.
Yeah.
So now what I'm saying is, you know what? I'm going to sort of just take the information in front of me and just sell off my W's that I don't have and sign a few more M's so that my second and third lineup.
So many letters, Rich.
But I'm gonna remake my team to get the kind of players who match the formation that I like to play, and hopefully get some more money. And then that way my second and my third lineups for those, you know, for the FA Cup and stuff like that, I can field clubs that'll win that too. So it's this whole other level that I'm just starting to deal with, which is amazing considering how much I play this. I don't know if it's the right strategy to take, but it's the strategy I'm taking. I'm just thoroughly enjoying every second of it.
Yeah. For me, this is kind of the point of the year where I take a little bit of a break. I don't feel really motivated to play the Maddens or 2Ks of the world right now, or the FIFAs or whatever. There are two games recently that I've spent some time with, and one is called 3-on-3 Freestyle.
How is that?
So this is a free-to-play game on PS4, okay? It's a sequel to a game that was free-to-play on PC a year and a half ago. And it's an arcade outdoor street basketball game. 3-on-3, as the title would suggest. And you know, we've gone years without an NBA Street, so it's great to see an arcade-type game come back. And the free-to-play model is interesting for several reasons, because we talked about that potentially being the, you know, the method of distribution for certain types of games that struggle to sell at $60 or $20, whatever it might be. And so we have an unlicensed game here that's doing it. It's free to play. You can spend money on things that boost up your characters. It's kind of like an MMO in that regard. You're building up your characters. You're unlocking new characters and building them up through your play or through spending money, and then applying those things to your character. And they have them built out. You know, they've got certain skill sets. So they're the point guards. They're the power forwards, the centers. These are all pre-created characters, which is one of the downsides, because they're a bit, the word's not coming to me, but they're not really all that appealing, these characters. So that's one downside. You can't create your own person. But I've actually kind of enjoyed it, and it's a little bit rough. I mean, the player movement, everything's rough, but it's kind of rough in an old school way. Like, I thought, to me, it feels like a bit of a throwback game, and to the 90s or whatever it might be, in terms of gameplay feel. And I know that turns a lot of people off. For some reason, it works for me, and I think it's actually pretty fun. The biggest issue I have with the game is that there's just not a lot of people playing. It can take 2 to 3 minutes to get your two teammates in. So this is an online-only game. You're playing with other people 3-on-3, so every player on the court is user-controlled. And the other issue I have with it is that if one person disconnects, the game just ends. So that's unfortunate. Hopefully there's some workaround for that in the future. I don't know if they're going to have a CPU person take over in their place or whatever, but it's kind of jarring just to lose your whole match. So there's that. And then there's Forza Horizon 3, which had its big first downloadable content edition
yes.
of the game. With
you liked it.
With Blizzard.
I read
Mountain.
Your it's, stuff. You yeah, liked it.
It's awesome. I mean, like, it's completely different experience to race in the snow and the wind and the visibility.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment here, and I'm sorry. But did you know where to go and what to do next? Because that was my problem. Yeah. With Forza Horizon 3, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I played a lot of it, but at a certain point in time, I didn't really quite know where to go or what to do. Okay. Not only, like, I can look at a map and I can see spots to go to. I don't mean from that perspective. I mean from the perspective of where am I going to go that's going to advance me? Right. What's going to get me more fans? What's going to unlock the next set of races? Like, yeah. Forza Horizon 3 has always been about... Or not Forza Horizon 3. Forza Horizon has always been about, okay, you unlock this new set of three races, and then you win the three races and or come in the top two or three, which gets you a bunch of good stuff, and then you open up the next set of races. I couldn't – after a certain point in time, I lost that with Forza Horizon 3. So does this expansion do a good job leading you through the progression?
Yeah, so it's structured differently than the rest of the game. And so in that sense, I would say it does, Rich, because – it's limited. So you're up in a more constrained space because it's just that one mountain. And there's a certain number of challenges, a certain number of events you're going to be able to do there. And instead of the normal way that you progress throughout the game, in this one they've done something where you earn stars, okay? You earn stars for completing the race. You get 1 star just for completing it. You get 2 for completing it and winning. And then you get 3 if you complete it, win, and meet a certain task, like a suggestion, or they want you to do a certain number of these tricks or a certain number of these, you know, they're giving you a task to do during the race while you also win. So you're collecting these stars through that, and then when you reach 10 stars, it unlocks the next several events. And then when you get another 10 stars, it unlocks more events. So you are going to progress in that sense, Rich, that, okay, you see all these things that are open to you now. Now you have to go see how many stars you're going to earn to get to the next ones.
I like that, and so now I'm going to have to go buy that. So thank you for making me do that, Brian Weedye.
Yeah, you're welcome. I like that about the star system. The one thing I don't like is really the is part of that. I don't think it's really a natural way to play the actual races where you're trying to meet these objectives that they've set for you. Because I just want to race. I just want to try and win. And it's challenging, especially in these weather conditions. Challenging just to win. It's more challenging than the other races that I've done in the game. So the stars, that makes sense to me when you're doing PR stunts, you're doing bucket list challenges and stuff. I wish that wasn't as much of a part of the race or the objectives were different. Mm. That's just me personally. I think there's probably people who like that, but that's just me. But the game is, I mean, the weather conditions are phenomenal. I mean, it is amazing because there are points where it's snowing so hard and combined with the wind, and it might even be at night, and the visibility is almost or practically zero. And you feel like you have no way to drive in those conditions. So it's a big challenge, and it's a lot of fun because of that. And you get these new vehicles with it also. You get snow tires, helps you with your traction, but you're still racing over snow and ice. And there's an icy lake you have to race over sometimes, which you have like you I have to rewind like every 3 seconds to get through that thing because it's just there's nothing else like it. So,
well, at least you can rewind. It's a good feature to be able to do that.
The other caveat I have to point out, and I did this in my review also, is that you can't buy Blizzard Mountain and then just go play it. You have to have progressed a certain amount in Forza Horizon 3 to actually use it. You have to have...
Strange.
Yeah, and this is one of my... something I took issue with and mentioned in the review is that there's really no disclaimer about this when you go to buy it. Okay, you have to have 200,000 fans, which unlocks your third festival. Once you do that...
Oh, okay. I've done that.
Yeah, okay, so once you do that, it unlocks the airport, which is where you go, and it takes you to the mountain. So
interesting. Okay.
But it's for people who are just picking up the game or just started, they're just an hour or two into it or whatever, and they're like, whoa, this looks cool.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with it until you get that far. So, which might be, I don't know, what, 6 hours or something into it? So
It's probably like five. Yeah, there's a significant amount of gameplay that you have to get to. So it's good to know for sure.
So make sure you're that far if you're going to buy it, or, you know, if you're certain that you're still going to be playing it when you're that far in. But once you get to that point, I'd absolutely recommend you buy it. So I gave it a 4 out of 5 just because I was a little shaky on the star system. There's benefits to it and there's drawback that I didn't like so much. And then that you need to have gotten a decent amount into the game to actually play it. I know I went to their forums when I was initially trying to figure out, okay, how do I get to the mountain? Because I bought it. How do I get up to play it? And I had already unlocked all that, but I didn't know where to go. And in the forum, there were a lot of people talking about, you know, why is this still locked to me? And then eventually it seemed like the solution was, oh, yeah, you have to open up your third festival. What's it take to open up your third festival? That's 200,000 fans. So so there are definitely people who were met by that, unfortunately. So, but I would definitely recommend it if you're loving Forza Horizon 3. There's no other experience like it.
You know, I've got a lot of the holiday season was very good to me from a discount perspective. Uh-huh. I picked up today for $10, picked up Ratchet and Clank, which was a 2016 release. And I'm a fan of that series from several versions ago. I played a number of the PS3 games. The Future series in particular was spectacular. I finished a couple of those. And so I'm glad I picked that up for $10. I got that on my playlist. I have been continuing to play through Titanfall 2, which is I do not like first-person shooters, but every year I'll at least try one just to sort of stay aware of what the latest and greatest.
I'm done with first-person shooters.
Titanfall 2 is spectacular.
Yeah, I know it is, but I keep buying them, and then I play them for like one day or two, and I'm like, I'm not into this.
So I stopped buying them years ago, and 2 years ago, Far Cry, which actually I don't think was a first-person shooter, Far Cry 4 I enjoyed. Last year I bought Wolfenstein and did not like. I know a lot of people love that series. I didn't like it. But I heard so many people talking about how great Titanfall 2 was, and not just that it was great, but it was different. And after the first couple of levels, I was like, really? And then by the fifth, and sixth and seventh, I was completely hooked. Mm-hmm. So if there is a first person shooter that is going to, and I don't mean something that's going to get you back into the genre because most of them are the same. I mean just something that is going to be an enjoyable experience. It's going to be Titanfall 2, and you got to give it to about halfway through to really make that have that moment where you go, whoa, this is different. This is better than what I played before, and this is really taking the concepts of game design and interesting innovations in a place where you haven't gone before. That's where it's going to be. So I'm playing through that, and I also, because of our good friend TJ Larriman, aka That Sports Gamer, and several other people, but especially him, I went and bought at least the first couple of episodes of the Hitman series. And again, I'm not a fan of violent video games whatsoever.
Yeah.
But again, because I have read and heard so many people talking, this is much more about really logic and puzzle solving and really fascinating gameplay. So I went and picked up the first couple of episodes of that, and I'm going to give those a shot. And now, of course, I'm going to go get Forza Horizon 3, this Blizzard Mountain or whatever it's called. So I'm going to have a lot on my plate, but I'll be good till the show comes out. I mean, that will keep me very entertained, because I will continue to play Pro Evolution on my treadmill every day, and then I'll play these for the couple hours a week when I'm able to sit down and just play games for fun, and I'll be good.
Yeah, quick recommendation, Rich. If you're going to do Blizzard Mountain right now on Xbox, you can get the, what is it called? It's the expansion pass for Forza Horizon 3 for $25. And that'll get you the Blizzard
Mountain. That's a lot of content.
It'll get you Blizzard Mountain. It'll also get you their next expansion. So do that for $25 instead of buying Blizzard Mountain for $20 outright. It's on sale. The expansion pass is on sale. It's normally $35.
And the reason that that's also interesting is because not only can I use it on my Xbox One right now, but if I get an Xbox One S or the Scorpio, that'll be there for me. Plus with Microsoft Play Anywhere, that'll be there for me too. Yeah. So that's another reason. Like, this is some longer term stuff. This is not short term stuff, and that's why that sounds particularly interesting to me.
Yeah. Finally, let's wrap it up, Rich, with a couple minutes here, just talking about the Pasta Padre Community Awards.
Yes.
Which is in its seventh year of awards now, which is amazing kind of to think about.
Impressive.
So, yeah, these have rolled out. There are currently 7 categories open for voting right now. There are a total of 12, so there's 5 more that's going to be opening up in the coming days. Going to rattle them off, talk about the nominees real quick. We're going to have a show coming up where we talk about all of them and the results and everything at length, but I thought we'd hit on them a little bit now. So you can visit pastapadre.com and vote on these. So just real quick, Rich, let's start off with best gameplay. Okay. Best gameplay is one that's generally won by, let's see, NBA 2K. They've won 4 straight years. And this year they're back up for nomination. But this is really a game that's there's a bit of the community isn't really united around 2K17. And so there's a possibility here that one of the other two games, Pro Evolution Soccer 2017 or MLB The Show 16, could take this category this year.
Well, if it's ever going to happen, excuse me, this is the year, because both of those games' gameplay is better than NBA 2K. And I say that's a pretty bold statement, but I don't say that as a knock against NBA 2K. It's merely supporting Pro Evo and MLB. would have no problem with either of those games winning this award. The fact that Pro Evo is even has a shot is good, because it is, from a sales perspective and an awareness perspective, so much less of a factor than the other games. Both of those games are better than NBA 2K, and I enjoy NBA 2K. Again, it's not a knock. It's just that's how great MLB The Show is. It is spectacular from a gameplay perspective. That is its core strength. Everything that is good about MLB The Show emanates from the fact that playing the game on the field is so great.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Pro Evolution. Everything around it, and there's a lot less around Pro Evo than there is around MLB 16. Not that there aren't similar modes. There is a single-player career mode in Pro Evo. There is a Diamond Dynasty-type, you know, Ultimate Team mode in Pro Evo. There is a franchise mode in Pro Evo. But just MLB has another 50, you know, 50 bullet points around it than Pro Evo does. But they all start with the gameplay. So
yep.
NBA 2K, I will be surprised if it makes it five in a row. And I'll be disappointed isn't the right word, because I love NBA 2K and I like the guys who make it. They're our friends. But Pro Evo and MLB are, in my opinion, a step above them this year.
Yeah, I agree. I almost I had to consider whether even to put 2K into nomination.
You could have put Madden in there instead.
Yeah, I mean,
could
I considered
have.
That. I absolutely considered that, or FIFA even.
Yeah, you could have done that too.
Or NBA 2K, you know.
Even NHL, you know what I mean? Like, we've had a lot of debates about NHL this year. We know Millennium loves it, and we know that I don't. And it's not that I don't because I have anything against it. It just isn't appealing to me. But there's a lot at its core engine that it gets right. It's just there's it doesn't have the same appeal that the others do. Because of what I've talked about earlier, I just don't quite feel in Pro Evo and even in Madden, certainly in MLB and in NBA 2K, you feel the different kind of players. In NHL, everybody feels the same. And I think that's my biggest issue with it. I think a lot of people's biggest issue with it.
All right. So then there's also best career / story mode. And so it's kind of the three stalwarts in this area, and that's NBA 2K17 with My Career, FIFA 17, though, making its way in with The Journey, and MLB The Show 16 with Road to the Show. So you've got the two story modes, NBA 2K17 and FIFA 17, and then you've got kind of the more traditional career mode in MLB The Show.
Well, again, to me, this is I'll be surprised if The Journey doesn't win, because it took much bolder, bigger steps than the other two did this year. Road to the Show is very much a stalwart. It does what it does, and it does so unapologetically. And it offers a group of people an experience that they really enjoy and they love doing every year. So, but it's not sending any sort of new feel or netting, you know, it's not blazing any new trails yet. And then with NBA 2K, I think it took a step back this year simply because the ability to make your player better took longer, and it already was a pretty intense process.
It's a grind.
And the grind got even grindier.
Yeah.
And for my money, my favorite NBA 2K experience was last year, year two. So in NBA 2K16, the second season of My Career after you got through the Spike Lee stuff.
Because it was over.
Well, no.
The story.
No, not
over.
Because it was over. I liked the story mode. I liked it. But what I'm saying is that year two, when you didn't have that mode, the actual progression through this season two, three, four, the choices you had to make on a daily basis, do I go here, do this, do I go here, do that, some of that is mechanically similar this year. But you got a lot more out of it without having to do nearly as much going to the practice court. It was so much better last year. Season two, season three of the single player career last year far surpassed the single player this year. It just was too much, and I wanted to like it. I tried to like it. I played it. I couldn't deal. It was just too much, way too much time for way too little benefit for me. And so I'll be surprised if The Journey doesn't get a significant win here.
Yeah, That's what I would look for also. Any chance that NBA 2K loses in presentation? It's won 6 straight years in presentation. Nobody else, no other game has won in best presentation. Going against it, FIFA 17 and Madden making its first foray into the presentation category.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it. I think NBA 2K wins this one going away, and it should, because it is the best. And it's one area where it certainly did not take a step back. If anything, it got better this year. Whenever I play NBA 2K, I marvel at how great the presentation is, at how good it looks, at how great it sounds. And I don't mean just sounds, like the commentary or the sneakers on the court or the crowd. I mean, all of those things sound fantastic. Mm. And the visuals, the graphics are crisp and clear. So, no, I don't see anybody, I don't see NBA 2K losing this one at all.
Now, I know you probably haven't played these team building modes, Rich, but up for nomination in Best Team Building Mode, which is a category that began last year and was won in a squeaker by Diamond Dynasty over Madden Ultimate Team. Diamond Dynasty is going for it again against Madden Ultimate Team and FIFA Ultimate Team.
Yeah, I bet you, maybe it's just because of the people that I sort of follow and hang around with, but Diamond Dynasty has seemed to me to have the most love. You know, Ultimate Team has a lot of fans, obviously, and it gets a tremendous amount of of coverage from the publishers, as well they should. You know, these are year-long live services, but it just seems to me like the Diamond Dynasty had the most sort of organic enjoyment out of it from all of them. So that's where I'm putting my chips. But FUT and Mutt are both great.
FUT and Mutt.
they're great at what they do, and they are the reasons that you and I get to play in our online leagues. You know what I mean? They're the reasons that Madden gets better as a game every year. They're the reason that FIFA is able to go to the Frostbite engine, right? You know, these games are absolutely 100% funding these things that we love. So I'm glad that they're good, but Diamond Dynasty, I believe, will get the victory this year in the community.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I peaked at early voting, and last year it was, I think Diamond Dynasty won like 46% to 45%. It was something like within a percentage point. And it's going to be that close again.
Good.
Based on what I'm saying. That's going to be an interesting category to monitor.
But to me, that's a good thing for the community. That's a good thing for everybody, right? Because even if I don't play a lot of this stuff, the fact is a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And that's good. And the fact that the people who play these modes, and you know, maybe I'm just not in the right places, but I just hear a lot of good stuff about these modes. Like, there's always complaining about stuff and people don't like this and that and the other thing. But overall, it seems like these things are kind of operating in a way where they're really serving their fans well. The people who love these modes seem to be enjoying them overall and having positive experiences, and that's good for everybody.
Yeah, and absolutely, because you're at a point where in MLB The Show, there's still people playing Diamond Dynasty. They're still getting new content. There's new things to do.
It's the end of the year, like the end of the calendar year. So that's unbelievable.
It really does. It extends kind of the life of these games also, which is an underrated aspect of them. Best online play, Rich. This has been always dominated by EA Sports because of, you know, 2K has had and Sony have had their server and online issues, and they continue to do so. They're better now. They're adequate, but EA still holds down this area where NCAA football has won before, and Madden's on a streak of 5 straight wins here. Madden has a bunch of different ways to play online, different draft champions, ultimate team, salary cap, online events, online franchise. And then you've got FIFA, which has let you play up to 22 players at once. And it's
that's amazing.
People connected from all across the world, and the games run smoothly. And then there's, in its second year of release, Rocket League has to be included in here.
Yes.
Because
it is
all about online, and the games are amazing online.
Yeah. I mean, this is a community award more than anything else, because this is all about what you do with a group of people. And I don't know how many Rocket League people are voters in the Pasta Pottery Community Awards, but considering how popular that game is and how many people play it, if that doesn't win it, I'll be surprised at this point. It probably should be the winner of this.
It could. So,
I mean, it's literally its entire existence is based upon that.
Yeah. If it wasn't good, it wouldn't be around.
If it wasn't good, it would not be around. And it's not only is it around, but it's wildly popular and incredibly profitable. So, like, to me, if there's any criteria you need, that's right there. That's it right there.
So other categories, these are the ones that have not been posted yet, but will be shortly. We've got Best Post-Release Support, which once again, Rocket League makes an appearance. They've had a bunch of free DLC and paid additions to the game also, which are just cosmetic. Madden, which continues to do weekly commentary updates, weekly roster updates, Ultimate Team updates frequently, and they even add features and different ways to play into the game post-release. And then UFC, which did similar, adding to their roster consistently throughout the year, several different patches, improving on the game.
This comes down to what game do you like best? You know what I mean? Because they all do it. And again, they all do it for a reason. This is how they make their money now. So it used to be in the past that sort of post-release support was them being nice.
It's a luxury. Yeah, really.
Now it's table stakes. I mean, this is how you make your money. Whatever you invest in delivering new content every week, you're going to get more revenue if you do, and you will not get revenue if you don't. So it's a fascinating thing to watch as this has evolved relatively quickly and without fanfare. You know what I mean? It's not like this has been trumpeted from the skies. Buy this game because we're going to support it all year long. It's just happened. You know what I mean? Like, it's never part of what's discussed at the beginning. They never go into Ultimate Team saying, Ultimate Team, you're going to be playing this 11 months from now because we're going to be giving you new packs.
Yeah.
So this was never really announced as a strategy. It's just sort of happened, and now every game does it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, I think with the best support, well, what do you like best? Because that's what you're going to like best, because you like MLB The Show the best, or you like Madden the best, or whatever.
Yeah. Another category, best new feature. And this one I have not put in concrete, the nominees, but I believe it's going to be Madden's weekly commentary updates, okay. NBA 2K17's league expansion.
That's a good one.
Start today in NBA 2K17.
I've used it twice. Works great.
KO mode in UFC.
Okay, not a UFC guy.
And relocation in NHL 17.
Okay.
I think that's going to be it. I have to go run through the games one more time and make sure that I'm not missing something there. But those are the ones that I've noted now.
Okay.
Let's get to the games of the year, though, Rich. Best racing game. Dirt Rally, Forza Horizon 3, F1 2016.
F1 2016, with people who are familiar with this show know that our racing experts, Dr. Ken and Greg Seward, love F1. They love it, and they know what they're talking about at a deep level.
Yeah.
So going off of them, I'm going with F1, but Forza Horizon puts up a good fight. It's just, again, because I sort of got lost after I got a certain number of fans and it wasn't clear to me what to do and how to keep moving forward. I just I sort of fell off with it after that.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one? I'm sorry?
Dirt Rally, which is...
Dirt Rally. Yeah, that's one of those that's...
Metacritic. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those that I even saw today when I was at the store with my son, poking around the video game store today when I picked up Ratchet and Clank for $10. Saw that, thought about it, and had I had this conversation before I went instead of afterwards, would have picked it up. I might still do that anyway, because if it's a really good racing game, I love me racing games.
I have not played it, but everything I've read about it, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm going to go get that in the next week or so, Mr. Weedon.
Just more to your list.
Just more to the list.
Best new or non-yearly game. So this is a category for games that release not every year, not annually, like the Maddens and the 2Ks of the world, but every other year, whatever it might be, or it's a new series. So we've got EA Sports UFC 2. We got Steep, which makes its appearance here. for the first time. Pretty well received. Snowboarding, parasailing, you know, they got different ways to go down mountains in that game. Mountain sports game. And then KC Powell lacrosse, which was a personal favorite of mine for this year. I know you didn't play UFC, Rich. Did you play either of those others?
Didn't play either of them. So I'll be interested to see what the community says. But that's okay. You know, there's a lot of games that came out this year. So, you know, I didn't play any of them, but not because of any other reason than time and resources. So I'll be very interested to see. The one that I have seen the most of is Steep. When I say seen, I mean, you know, several friends of mine do live streams, and I've watched a few minutes of each of them playing those games. But I'll be curious to see which is voted the winner.
And then finally, game of the year, which will probably be involving Madden, NBA 2K, Pro Evolution Soccer, and will be The Show in FIFA.
Yeah, it literally comes down to what game do you like best here, right? So what game has the most fans of Pasta Padre will very likely weigh that. I hope Pro Evo gets at least enough of a set of votes to make it respectable. I imagine it will come in last in all those because it's the last in popularity, and that's okay. Mm. I expect MLB The Show will win, because not just because it won Sports Game of the Year with our show, but because I think it has the most. I think most of the people will vote for it. I think Madden gets, you know, the benefit of being popular, but also the negative of being, you know, the game that people like to rail on for reasons that some are legit and some are not. You know, and NBA 2K for the same reason, right? Like NBA 2K, we've seen some backlash this year because it just didn't quite hit the mark with certain people. But
that's inevitable.
You know, yeah, but exactly. It is the most successful game in the United States. It is a great seller. It's wildly popular. There's no problems going on over there. So just because it might not be as much of a critical darling as it has in the past doesn't. It doesn't portend anything there. But from a voting perspective, there will be plenty of people who will automatically vote for it, but there will be some people who will not because what it is. So it'll be very interesting to see who wins. Yep. I'm predicting MLB The Show, but wouldn't be surprised if it were not.
Yeah, Community Game of the Year has been interesting over the years because it has hit on a number of different games. Madden NFL 10 won the first year. Okay. Madden hasn't been back since. But NBA 2K11, FIFA 12, NBA 2K13, MLB 13 The Show, and then NBA 2K15 and 16. So NBA 2K has
three out of four. Then.
Yeah, he has four out of the 7 years. So, and then you have a mix of the other games. So there's a potential. Maybe NBA 2K has a bit of an advantage going in, but there's a potential that the community sees a different game depending on the year. So
yep, absolutely.
That's what makes it interesting. It's the same thing every year. That would be a waste of time for everyone. All right, Rich, that'll do it for this show. Thank you, Rich Grisham, for joining me, Pasta Padre Brian Wheat-Eye here on this episode of the Press Row Podcast. This will be our last episode of 2016. We'll be back in early 2017. We got a bunch of different show ideas to roll out for you. Thank you very much for listening, everyone, and have a good new year.